happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
Oh, when he wore.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
He washed my sins away.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you. Today, we have an empowerment hour. I've foregone a guest so we could offer some additional commentaries that I wanted to do this week, but simply haven't had the time. I was watching Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and others discuss what to do about Egypt. And of course, all the militarists, the neocons, the war hawks on Fox suggested we need to show that we're tough and that we support the generals and the military. Not once was there even the irony that these generals and military were the ones that kept the Egyptian people under lock and key for the last 35 years with our full support. So what is the real underlying problem in Egypt and around the world in other countries? And until we address this issue, we will not see any of the changes that people deserve. Murdering the Wretched of the Earth, Truth Dig, Chris Hedges. Coming up. Then Humanity is Drowning in Washington's Criminality by Professor Paul Craig Roberts. Then, finally today, 10 Things You Should Know About the Federal Reserve, plus from our fascism series, the National Security Agency surveillance broke privacy rules thousands of times a year, yet nothing happens to them. From our public health segment, the National Academy of Science, quote, misled the world when adapting radiation exposure guidelines. This is from the news staff of Science Magazine. And I'll tell you about what a toxicologist, Dr. Edward Calabrese, University of Massachusetts Amherst, had to say. It literally is a game changer about how much toxic exposure we can have before it undermines our health. We have been misled. This is a news story, so please pay attention. From our GMO watch, Monsanto's GMO feed creates horrific physical ailments in animals. We'll give you the latest on that. From our environmental segment, I've been talking about the problems of water. Well, now we're going to talk about the problems of heat. And a new study just came in today from two different sources, showing you that we're going to have more heat waves for certain. In fact, one is predicting a 300% increase and an increase going higher than the world can really accept and still be livable. And when would this happen? In the next 6 years. So, we have a lot to share. Now, I don't share that information to startle or scare people, simply to inform them. Because if you know what's likely to happen, where it's likely to happen, you could get yourself out of harm's way. So I give it to you as an opportunity to change while you still can. Let's begin. We have a lot on our agenda. And oh, by the way, one day next week, it is my hope to begin a series on who controls the world. It has taken a long time and a lot of research and scholarship before I wanted to present this because I knew that this would be used by people who are wanting to know why we're in such a mess, but also by those who I'm challenging will try to debunk it. So there's been a great deal of outside scholarship applied to make sure that all my statements and figures and the analysis is correct. So that's completed now, and I'm supposed to get my final report with any corrections on Monday. So in the next week, what could be one of the most important, original, in-depth investigative reporting series ever, and certainly on our sister station WBAI, PFW in Washington. Everyone will want to hear this, and when you do hear it, it'll be posted the same day on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Please share this with people, because in some respects, I'm very concerned that so many people on the left, including on some of the Pacifica stations, have simply divorced themselves from accepting that there's any conspiracies out there, or that the bankers are really responsible. And they don't know what they're talking about, and they're coming from just their own biased opinions. So I'm going to hopefully provide those of you who are more open-minded and truly more progressive with the facts you need, so that when someone makes a misinformed or uninformed statement, you at least have something to offer as a legitimate challenge. No one has ever done this topic before. They generally say, oh, it's just the bankers. Well, it's not. It's far more than the bankers. Oh, it's the Rothschilds. It's the Zionists. No, it's not. Who really controls the world, you'll be surprised. And how they do it and how they get away with it is what will be the topic of my in-depth original investigative report. By the way, later today or Monday, we will be posting about 40 original in-depth investigative reports that we've done on this program in the last 2 years. So you can catch up for the new people, and we have about 5,000 to 6,000 brand new people every day listening in. So you can get up to date on what we've done. We should pay attention to our oral hygiene. Most people don't. Most people don't brush their teeth correctly. They rarely floss. And most people don't irrigate between the teeth. As a result, you end up having bacteria that set in and can cause all forms of problems. Now, normally we think of bad breath. Well, yes, that can be due to different oils and from the food that you've consumed lodging in the sponginess of your tongue. And therefore, when you breathe, you're breathing out across those little filaments, and that carries the pheromones into the air, hence someone smells what you just ate. Or you could have an upset stomach, and as you regurgitate, that comes out and it has bad breath. And some people just have spongy gums. They have a weakened immune system. They have local focal infections. They don't pay attention to it because they don't see the little specks of blood, sometimes almost imperceptible on their toothbrush. They should. That's why regular twice-a-year oral examinations are important. But there's something new. This comes from the peer reviewed journal Cell Host and Microbe. And this was from Harvard Medical School researchers. Quote from the BBC. Researchers say they have uncovered how bacteria can set off a chain reaction leading to bowel cancer. Flusobacteria, commonly found in the mouth, cause overreactive immune responses and turn on cancer gene cells in the colon. Two separate studies found this out. The microbes have been linked with colorectal cancer before, but it was not known whether they were directly involved in tumor growth. In addition to potential new treatments, the discovery could lead to better early diagnosis and prevention. And then it goes on to talk about the two studies at Case Western Reserve University and Harvard Medical School did this. So what does this mean when you end up having this particular Fuso bacteria, F-U-S-O bacteria? It means you're not engaged in good hygiene. Now, what can you do? First, you brush your teeth properly and not back and forth, but up and down. Ideally, use a vibrating toothbrush because you get about 1,000 of those strokes up and down per minute, which is much better than what you could do by hand. Secondly, then you floss between the teeth after each meal, and then use a mouthwash, and you gargle the mouthwash for about 60 seconds. Then take a tongue cleaner and clean off your tongue. That way, at least, you have a pretty good chance of having proper hygiene and no overgrowth of any pathogenic bacteria in the mouth. Next up, I've been talking about the Mediterranean diet and why it's so important. There's a new study, and this is from Tufts University, and published in Diabetes Care, and what it says is the Mediterranean diet, quote, can reduce genetic stroke risk. They looked at over 7,000 men and women and found that those who were on the Mediterranean diet had thinner blood. Well, that's normal because you have all the good oils. Like when you eat almonds and walnuts and pistachios and pine nuts, which are common in the Mediterranean, that thins your blood. And the fish oil turns off inflammation because fish is good in the sense that it can help lower your risk of stroke by in and of itself. So one more reason to eat a plant-based diet filled with fruits and vegetables and whole grains and legumes and nuts. And this was also supported by a Mayo Clinic study as well. Quote from the Mayo Clinic, eating primarily a plant-based diet, such as fruit, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, and nuts, replace butter with heavy fats such as olive oil, healthy fats with such as olive oil, using herbs and spices instead of salt and flavor, limiting red meat to no more than a few times a month, and that is what they're suggesting. And they're right. So good. That's a good first step for a lot of people. And besides, take in the cuisines of Spain and Italy and Greece and Portugal. You have an awful lot of good cuisine that you can enjoy. It's not a boring diet. Now, I've mentioned recently, in fact, just last week, that soy foods protect against colon cancer. There's a new study out done at the University of Illinois that talks about the more genistein that we have. And by the way, you should know by now that genistein is the bioactive component in soy that protects against colon cancer by repressing a signal that leads to accelerated growth of the cells and polyps and could eventually lead to malignant tumors. Quote, in our study, we report a change in the expression of three genes that control an important signaling pathway. And this was from a Professor Chen, who is a professor of food science. And that is what it does. So you can get genistein as a supplement. You can have genistein in your soy. Either way, it's good for you and helps prevent cancer. Also, there is an amino acid that is important after you're about 40 years of age, because once men and women hit 40, you begin to see a difference in your musculature. You begin to thin out in your upper arms and your back and your muscles, and you start to get some flab under the arms and saggy skin. This is something we adapt to, and we shouldn't, because there's a simple amino acid that can help prevent that. It's called leucine, L-E-U-C-I-N-E. It's inexpensive, and it prevents muscle wasting. It's also great for people in hospitals because it prevents them, when they're bedbound, from losing all their muscle mass also. There was research funded by NASA scientists, University of Texas Medical Branch, and they found that using that is a very good way to prevent muscle wasting, and especially if you're in bed. Now, consider how many millions of Americans are in nursing homes or assisted living centers or in hospitals or are not able to be as active as they should be. They're going to lose muscle. This is what it says, quote, this worked well. It effectively prevented or really slowed down the loss of muscle. All right, that's good. So now you know what to do. I can remember my first debate on the subject of soft drinks. This was in the early 1970s. And I was up against a whole range of corporations. I don't know why. I guess because Carlton Fredericks didn't want to go out and debate, but there were just two of us at the national level in the United States. Carlton Fredericks on WOR and me on WMCA. And so I was representing the young people, in my early 20s, and he was representing the older people. But he had some problems, image problems. A, his PhD, and he insisted on being called doctor. Even in a private lunch I had with him, it wasn't Mr. Fredericks, it was Dr. Fredericks. And so I simply found out on my own that his PhD was in public relations at New York University. So I asked him, I said, do you have any background, clinical background, degree background, credential background, credits in nutrition, public health? Well, that's not what's important. And he went into this whole defense and got very angry. And in any case, he smoked, and he would do so even when he was on television, and he drank. And outside of a high animal-based diet for being anti-hypoglycemia and promoting a little bit of fiber, it was the same message recycled for 30 years, but the audience appreciated him. And to the degree that he got people to make some positive choices and reduce their sugar intake, good for him. But then you had this awakening of the consumer movement. And so there were really no credentialed people to go out there and take them on at that time. So it fell upon the lay public, like myself. I was not a credentialed person at that time. So I used the scientific research and common sense. And in 1 month, I think I had 5 debates with the heads of the sugar industry and the artificial sweetener industry and the meat industry and the dairy industry and the egg industry. And these were all national. And because we were also, there was a movement to shift towards a healthier diet, to shift towards organic. So what we're asking people to do today, we were doing back then. It was a big movement. And I can remember talking with this person in this debate who said, you'd have to drink 565 cans of this before it'd represent any problem to your liver. And I said, well, sir, what if you're an overweight diabetic and you drink 2 cans of soft drink a day? You've just far exceeded that. And we have an awful lot of obese people who live on artificially sweetened beverages. And that's how the debates went. I remember on ABC in Chicago debating one of the top heads of the AMA on fiber. Now, if you could imagine this, where he said, quote, fiber is only good for pigs and cattle. And I said, well, when you consider the average American only consumes 3 grams of fiber a day, and yet in other cultures, such as in Africa, the Maasai consume 50 grams a day, and they don't have any colorectal cancer or itises, and heart attacks are so rare that when one actually occurred, a doctor, Burkitt, Burkitt's lymphoma, drove to the hospital to examine it. Because in 67 hospitals in East Africa that he attended to, he had never seen a case. So I said, but here it's common. But that was the argument, because so much of the American diet was processed. Remember, when you're eating meat and dairy and cheese and sugar, you're not getting any fiber. This is the latest. Now the pendulum is swinging. Even the compliant media that receives an awful lot of money for all those ads. Remember, every time you see an ad for a cola or a soft drink of any kind, or confection, they have to make a decision. Do we want to tell the people the truth by having a report on the dangers of this and lose our advertising, or do we just want to, you know, not deal with it at all? And so self-censorship is rampant in the media when it comes to their financial interest. This is from Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. Quote, soft drink consumption linked to behavioral problems in young children. Americans buy more soft drinks per capita than people in any other country. These drinks are consumed by individuals of all ages, including very young children. Although soft drink consumption is associated with aggressive behavior, depression, and suicidal thoughts in adolescents, the relationship had not been evaluated in younger people. A new study by researchers at Columbia University's University of Vermont and Harvard School of Public Health, published in the Journal of Pediatrics, finds, quote, that aggressive attention problems and withdrawal behavior are all associated with soft drink consumption in young children. Wow. Finally, they did it. quote, we found that the child's aggressive behavior score increased with increasing soft drinks servings per day, said Dr. Julia. So one more reason for our children, infants, babies, toddlers, teens, and adults, there is a biological consequence to the sugar on your biochemistry and your hormones. And finally, obesity kills more Americans than previously thought. This is of Columbia University, and here's what it says. It says, 1 in 5 Americans, black and white, die from obesity. That's 300% more than the previous estimate. Whoa, that's a large number of people dying. And by the way, obesity in the African-American community is now 18%. That's huge. Quote, obesity has dramatically worse health consequences than some recent reports have led us to believe, said Dr. Masters, who conducted the research at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, health and society scholar at Columbia University's public health school. We expect that obesity will be responsible for an increased share of deaths in the United States and perhaps even lead to declines in U.S. life expectancy. Well, we know why we're overweight. And we're all looking, not all, but most Americans are looking for some magic diet, but an awful lot of Americans, especially those in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, are not interested in diets. To the contrary, they're interested in enjoying the biggest meal they can with the most fat and protein and sugar possible. They're actually going out of their way to find humongous meals to consume. And these are not stupid people. They're bright enough to know that this is not good for them. And yet they do it anyhow. So to the contrary of gee whiz, you know, it's the only reason that we're fat is because we can't afford better food. That myth has got to die. We're actively, consciously, knowingly consuming the worst foods and bypassing the healthier foods. One last little study. There's a good study on blueberries. And blueberries, they found, have a compound in them that can negate the adverse effects of irradiation while inducing cancer cell death. So blueberries can kill cancer cells. That is good news. So the more blueberries you consume, the better it is for you. Back in a moment with commentaries. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you from all over the world. I appreciate you tuning in, and more importantly, I appreciate you sharing with friends and others the information. We are seeing a tremendous increase in people listening, but also we get an actual signature imprint electronically for every time you open up an article and then download that or watch a film and download that. Just with one film alone that we have up there, free for people to see, Seeds of Death, over 1 million people have shared it with other people. So who knows now, because I can't record how many, I have no record of how many other people send it to other people, but we're guesstimating that it's well over 10 million people have watched that. That means that is helping educate the lay public to why they should become engaged in anti-GMO protests and activities. But also the number of articles that you're sharing, because we put anywhere from 50 to 75 original articles per day from leading publications and scholars on different themes involving seeking solutions to problems. So we're seeing the numbers go up and up and up. Last year it was 15 million. So we're looking at probably doubling that or tripling that this year. So thank you for that. Let's give you some of that information right now that you haven't heard anywhere else. The National Academy of Science, quote, misled the world by adapting radiation exposure guidelines. This is from the new staff of science, quote, toxicologist Dr. Edward Calabrese of the University of Massachusetts Amherst has charged both the National Academy of Sciences and two scientists who provided crucial information for atomic-age carcinogen risk assessment regarding the linear no-threshold dose-response approach to ionizing radiation exposure in the 1950s. Calabrese says these were deliberate suppression of evidence to prevent the regulatory panel from considering an alternative threshold model. The LNT model was later generalized to chemical carcinogenic risk assessment. Calabrese says, quote, "The regulatory research community needs to hear about this. This isn't an academic debate. It's practical because all of our rules about chemical and low-level radiation are based upon unvalidated assumptions and scientific panel decisions made without sound evidence. Now, after all these years, it's very hard when people have been frightened to death of any exposure whatsoever to persuade them that they don't need to be scared by these exposures." So he is challenging the model that was used, and that's a good debate. Also from the from our fascism corner, the National Security Agency, according to the Washington Post this morning, has broken privacy rules or overstepped its legal authority thousands of times each year since Congress granted the agency broad new powers in 2008, and most of the infractions involve unauthorized surveillance of Americans. Here's the bottom line on this. I have said it for some time, but people chose not to listen or think it was valid. I said over 10 years ago that virtually everything you do in an electronic way is completely captured. Your telephone messages, conversations, photographs, emails, everything that you do. If you fax someone, if you send them anything, the national agency has this. And those who should have known should have spoken, and they didn't. So that's the reality. Now it's showing that they're even exceeding the authority they had, but no one will be held accountable. From our GMO Watch, this is from Catherine Paul of Alternet. Quote, "We associate food with our most pleasurable event, at the very least, and survival at a necessary level. It's not too different from animals. Lambs turned out on new grass quickly move over certain grasses to get to others, to nosh on clover and mustard grass, avoiding horse nettle along the way. Wild pigs, capable of seeking out the nutrients they need, enjoy eating nuts and roots and fruits and mushrooms and bugs and whatever else they can find. What happens when animals are confined in cramped, filthy environments and force-fed monoculture diets of genetically modified corn and soy? A lot can happen. Calves are born too weak to walk, with enlarged joints and limb deformities. Piglets experience rapid deterioration in their health, a failure to thrive, so severe that they start breaking down their own tissues and organs, self-cannibalizing to survive. Many animals suffer from weak, brittle bones that easily fracture. Dairy cows develop mastitis, a painful udder infection. Beef cattle develop liver abscesses and an excruciating condition referred to as twisted gut. It all adds up to a lot of misery for animals unfortunate enough to be on the receiving end of industrial agriculture's big GMO experiment." So now they're saying that all these animals that are fed GMO crops, unfit for human consumption. But just remember that every time you get that hamburger in the fast food joint or in the supermarket, there's a high probability that that animal is fed GMO food. That means it becomes part of its cells. That means when you eat it, it's going to become a part of yours. Do you really want to risk waking up one day and being told, oh my goodness, we didn't realize that the GM could manifest into our own cells? So just remember that. From our environmental segment today, this is from Climate News Network, a very respected organization. Here's what they say. Quote, "European climate scientists say the greenhouse gas is already in the atmosphere, meaning it is virtually inevitable that far more reports are going to come in about parts of the world experiencing more frequent and severe heat waves. Stand by for extreme weather. Prepare for heat waves on a scale that was once unprecedented. For once, there are no ifs in the forecast no caveats about modeling business-as-usual scenarios rather than dramatic reductions of emissions for near-term warming. Even if governments abandon fossil fuels everywhere, immediately, today, and invest only in green energy, there will be new record temperatures. The greenhouse gas emissions of the last few decades now mean that regions of the planet subject to extreme heat will double in the next 6 years. Dr. Kumru of the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research in Germany and a colleague from Madrid make this prediction in environmental research letters. In essence, they are only pointing out that the unprecedented heat waves that have already been recorded this century in Australia, U.S., Russia, Greece, and so on will increase in frequency and extend going up in Celsius. They have followed the mathematical logic of climate models and simple thermodynamics. Extra greenhouse gas already in the atmosphere has pushed up global average temperatures, but an average is only the sum of all the extremes divided by the days in the year. So they're saying it's only going to get worse, and there's nothing at this point that we can do that's going to change the short term on this. We have tipped. Of course, you already know that because I said that 4 of the 12 tipping points have tipped. This also in today from Common Dreams. Hot century ahead, study finds onslaught of heat waves now inevitable. Report comes as North Asia temperature spike, killing dozens in the midst of a blistering summer. A new study says the bad news is worse. It is too late to stop severe folds, increase of deadly heat waves caused by greenhouse gases and the floods, fires, and storms they bring. The report comes as a record heat wave hits North Asia, killing dozens, sickening far more, flooding hospitals with heat stroke victims. Amid power shortages, they're cutting off air conditioning in some areas. Published in Environmental Research Letters, the study tracks trends in heat increases, finding that, quote, three sigma heat wave events in which climates are warmed to three times their normal temperature over 3 weeks in a row have been on the rise since the 1950s and today cover approximately 5% of the Earth's land surface. No amount of emission mitigation can stop this frequency from doubling in the next few years. And extreme heat events will cover 20% of the globe. Furthermore, five sigma events, which do not occur presently, are expected to ravage some of the world's surface in the near future. So that's the bad news. What's the good news? Well, when we all become aware that we can't hide from this anymore and that we should make this a priority in our lives, then with some sense of focus, we can then decide, all right, now that I see what's coming, how can I, in a reasonable and responsible way, how can I reposition my life so that I can live in a sustainable environment? Well, you could grow your food hydroponically. That then mitigates the above-ground temperature. I could live where there's more abundant water and clean water. Well, that then is going to help you more than about one-third of the American population are now living in non-water sustainable environments. So bad news becomes good as far as your options. I'd rather know that something's about to happen because then I can get out of harm's way. Otherwise, a lot of people who don't see any of this because their income, work, living circumstance doesn't permit it, or they simply don't want to pay attention, they're going to be hit by this. Here's what Dr. Paul Craig Roberts has to say. I'm going to do two commentaries and open our phones for your feedback on our talkback segment. The article is entitled Humanity is Drowning in Washington's Criminality. Americans will soon be locked into an unaccountable police state unless U.S. representatives and senators find the courage to ask questions and to sanction the executive branch officials who break the law, violate the Constitution, withhold information from Congress, and give false information about their crimes against law, the Constitution, the American people, and those in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, Iraq, Libya, Syria, Somalia, Guatemala, and elsewhere. Congress needs to use the impeachment power that the Constitution provides and cease being subservient to the lawless executive branch. The U.S. faces no threat that justifies the lawlessness and abuse of police powers that characterize the executive branch in the 21st century. Impeachment is the most important power of Congress. Impeachment is what protects the citizens, the Constitution, and the other branches of government from abuse by the executive branch. If the power to remove abuse of executive branch officials is not used, the power ceases to exist. An unused power is like a dead letter law. Its authority disappears. By acquiescing to executive branch lawlessness, Congress has allowed the executive branch to place itself above the law and to escape accountability for violations of law and the Constitution. National Intelligence Director James Clapper blatantly lied to Congress and remains in office. Keith Alexander, Director of the National Security Agency, also misled Congress, and he remains in office. Attorney General Holder avoids telling Congress the truth on just about every subject, and he also remains in office. The same can be said for President Obama, one of the great deceivers of our time, who is so adverse to truth that truth seldom finds its way out of his mouth. If an American citizen lies to a federal investigator, even if not under oath, the citizen can be arrested, prosecuted, and sent to prison. Yet these same federal personnel can lie to Congress and to citizens with impunity. Whatever the American political system is, it is nothing whatsoever to do with accountability in government. In America, no one is accountable but citizens, who are accountable not only to law but also to unaccountable charges for which no evidence is required. Congress has the power to impeach any presidential appointee as well as the president. In the 1970s, Congress was going to impeach President Richard Nixon simply because he lied about being where he learned of the Watergate burglary. To avoid impeachment, he resigned. In the 1990s, the House impeached President Bill Clinton for lying about his sexual affair with a White House intern. The Senate failed to convict, no doubt, as many had sexual affairs of their own and didn't want to be held accountable themselves. In the 1970s, when I was on the Senate staff, corporate lobbyists would send attractive women to seduce senators so that the interest groups could blackmail the senators to do their bidding. Don't be surprised if the National Security Agency has adopted this corporate practice. The improprieties of Nixon and Clinton were minor, indeed, of little consequence, when compared to the crimes of George W. Bush and Obama, their vice presidents, and the bulk of their presidential appointees. Yet impeachment is off the table, as Nancy Pelosi infamously declared. Why do Californians voters send a person to Congress who refused to protect them from an unaccountable executive branch? Why does Nancy Pelosi who does she serve? Certainly not the people of California. Most certainly not the U.S. Constitution. Pelosi is in total violation of her oath of office. The question demanded to be asked is, what is the purpose of the domestic surveillance of all Americans? This is surveillance out of all proportion to the alleged terrorist threat. The U.S. Constitution is being ignored and domestic law violated. Why? Does the U.S. government have an undeclared agenda for which the terrorist threat is a cover? What is this agenda? Whose agenda is more important than the U.S. Constitution, the accountability of government, or to law? No citizen is secure unless government is accountable to the Constitution and to law. It is an absurd idea that any American is more threatened by terrorism than by unaccountable government that can execute them, torture them, and throw them into prison for life without due process or even accountability whatsoever. Under Bush and Obama, the U.S. has returned to an unaccountable power of Caesars, czars, and autocrats. In the famous play, A Man for All Seasons, Sir Thomas More, Chancellor of England, asks, "So, you would have me to cut down the law in order to chase after devils? And what will we do with the law cut down when the devil turns on us?" This is the most important legal question ever asked, and it is seldom asked today, not in our law schools, not by our bar associations, and most certainly not by the justices in the U.S. Justice Department. American conservatives regard civil liberties as mere excuses for liberal judges to coddle criminals and terrorists. Never expect a conservative Republican, or more than two or three of them, to defend your civil liberty. Republicans simply do not believe in civil liberty. Democrats cannot conceive that Obama, the first black president in office, a member of an oppressed minority, would not defend civil liberty. This combination of disinterest and denial is why the U.S. has become a police state. Civil liberty has few friends in government. the political parties, law schools, bar associations, or the federal judiciary. Consequently, no citizen is secure. Recently, a housewife researched online for pressure cookers looking for the best deal. Her husband was searching for a backpack. The result was that a fully armed SWAT team appeared at the door demanding to search the premises and to have questions answered. I'm always amazed when someone says, I haven't done anything wrong. I have nothing to fear. If you have nothing to fear from the government, why did the Founding Fathers put the protections in the Constitution that Bush and Obama have stripped out? Unlike the Founding Fathers who designed our government to protect the citizens, the American Sheppel trust the government to their own demise. Glenn Greenwald recently explained how the mass of data that is being accumulated on every American is being mined for any signs of non-terrorist-related criminal activity. As such, warrantless searches are illegal. Evidence in a criminal trial. The authorities disguise the illegal way in which the evidence is obtained in order to secure conviction based upon illegally obtained evidence. In other words, the use of the surveillance justified by the war on terror is already spread into prosecution for ordinary criminals where it was as corrupted legal safeguards and the integrity, if any, of the criminal court system and its corrupted prosecutors and judges. This is just one of the many ways in which you have much to fear. Whether you think about it or not, you can be framed for crimes based on inferences drawn from your internet activity and jokes with friends on social media. Jurors made paranoid by the terror threat will convict you. We should be very suspicious of the motive behind the universal spying on U.S. citizens. The authorities are aware that the terrorist threat does not justify the unconstitutional and illegal spying. There have been hardly any real terrorist events in the U.S., which is why the FBI has to find clueless people around whom to organize an FBI-orchestrated plot in order to keep the so-called terrorist threat alive in the public's mind. At last count, there have been 150 sting operations with the FBI recruits people who are out of touch with reality to engage in a well-paid FBI-designed plot. Once the dupes agree, they are arrested as terrorists and the plot's revealed, always with the accompanying statement that the public was never in danger as the FBI was in control. When 99% of all terrorism is organized by the FBI, why do we need the National Security Agency spying on every communications of every American and people in the rest of the world? Terrorism seldom comes from outside. The source almost always is the government in power. The Tsarist secret police set off bombs in order to blame and arrest labor agitators. The Nazis burned down the Reichstag in order to decimate the communists and assume unaccountable power in the name of public safety. An alleged terrorist threat is a way of using fear to block popular objection to the exercise of arbitrary government power. In order to be safe from terrorists, the U.S. population, with few objections, has accepted the demise of their civil liberties, such as habeas corpus, which reaches back centuries to the Magna Carta, as a constraint on government power. How, then, are they safe from their government? Americans today are in the same position as the English prior to the Great Charter of 1215. Americans are no longer protected by law and the Constitution from government tyranny. The reasons the Founding Fathers wrote the Constitution was to make citizens safe from their government. If citizens allow the government to take away the Constitution, they might be safe from foreign terrorists, but they are no longer safe from their own government. Why do you think the government seeks such power over you? And finally, and then we're going to talk back, and our number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. This is a letter to Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and all of the neocons that appear on their program, Karl Rove and John Bolton and all the rest who talk as if they're unbiased, objective observers. They are not. They would have us believe that the only way of approaching the problem in Egypt today is to fully support the troops, the military. Even Juan Williams, a faux liberal, agreed last evening. But there is a different perspective that Chris Hedges shares with us, and that is that radical Islam is the last refuge of the Muslim poor. The mandated five prayers a day give the only real structure to the lives of impoverished believers. The careful rituals of washing before prayers in the mosque, the strict moral code, along with the understanding that life has an ultimate purpose and meaning, keep hundreds of millions of destitute Muslims from despair. The fundamentalist ideology that rises from oppression is rigid and unforgiving. It radically splits the world into black and white, good and evil, apostates and believers. It is bigoted. It is cruel to women and Jews and Christians and secularists, along with gays and lesbians. But at the same time, it offers to those on the very bottom of society a final refuge and hope. The massacres of hundreds of believers in the streets of Cairo signaled not only an assault against a religious ideology, not only a return to the brutal police state of Mubarak, but the start of a holy war that will turn Egypt and other poor regions of the globe into a cauldron of blood and suffering. The only way to break the hold on radical Islam is to give its followers a stake in the wider economy, the possibility of a life where the future is not dominated by grinding poverty, repression, and hopelessness. If you live in the sprawling slums of Cairo or the refugee camps of Gaza or the concrete hovels of New Delhi, every avenue of escape is closed. You cannot get an education. You cannot get a job. You do not have the resources to marry. You cannot challenge the domination of the economy by the oligarchs and the generals. The only way left for you to affirm yourself is to become a martyr. Then you will get what you cannot get in life, a brief moment of fame and glory. And while that will take place in Egypt, it'll be defined as a religious war, and the acts of violence by the insurgents who arise from the bloodied squares of Cairo will be defined as terrorism. The engine of this chaos is not religion, but the collapsing economy of a world where the wretched of the earth are to be subjugated and starved or shot. The lines of battle are being drawn in Egypt and across the globe. Mansour, the titular president appointed by the military dictator of Egypt, has imposed a military-led government, a curfew and a state emergency that will not be lifted soon. The lifeblood of radical movements is martyrdom. The Egyptian military has provided an ample supply. The faces and names of the sacrificed dead will be used by enraged clerics to call for holy vengeance. And as violence grows and the lists of martyrs expand, a war will be ignited that will tear Egypt apart. Police, Coptic Christians, secularists, Westerners, businesses, banks, and terrorists, and tourism industry and the military will become targets. Those radical Islamists who were persuaded by the Muslim Brotherhood that electoral politics could work and brought into the system will go back underground, and many of the rank and file of the Muslim Brotherhood will join them. Crude bombs will be set off. Random attacks and assassinations by gunmen will punctuate daily life in Egypt as they did in the 1990s. What is happening in Egypt is a precursor to a wider global war between the world's elites and the world's poor, a war caused by diminishing resources, chronic unemployment and underemployment, overpopulation, declining crop yields caused by climate change, and rising food prices. 30% of Egypt's 80 million people are under 14, and millions live on just $2 a day. The poor in Egypt spend almost half of that money, a dollar a day, on malnourished food. An estimated 13 million Egyptians, or 17% of the population, suffer from food insecurity. The belief systems the oppressed embrace can be intolerant, but their belief systems are a response to the injustice and state violence and cruelty inflicted on them by the global elites. Our enemy is not radical Islam. It is global capitalism. It is a world where the wretched of the earth are forced to bow before the dictates of the marketplace, where children go hungry as global corporate elites siphon away the world's wealth and natural resources, and where our troops and U.S.-backed militaries carry out massacres on city streets. Egypt offers a window into the coming dystopia. The war of survival will mark the final stage of human habitation, unless we do something. Our number, 888-874-4888. By the way, 10 things that every American should know about the Federal Reserve. First, the Federal Reserve System is a privately owned banking cartel. It is not a government agency. It is privately owned by central banks. It is owned by the banks that are members of the Federal Reserve System. And we don't know how much each of the banks owns because it has never been disclosed. The Federal Reserve openly admits that it's privately owned. When it was defending itself against a Bloomberg request for information on the Freedom of Information Act, it said it didn't have to get because it was private. Number two, the Federal Reserve System is a perpetual debt machine. As long as the Federal Reserve System exists, the U.S. government debt will be continuing to go up. This runs contrary to the conventional wisdom that Democrats and Republicans would have us believe, but unfortunately it is true. The way our system works, whenever more money is created, more debt is created as well. For example, whenever the U.S. government wants to spend more money than it takes in, which is always, it has to go ask the Federal Reserve for it. The Federal Reserve gives U.S. Treasury bonds to the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve gives the U.S. government Federal Reserve notes in return. Usually this is just done electronically. So where does the Federal Reserve get the Federal Reserve notes? It creates it out of thin air. Wouldn't you like to be able to create money out of thin air? Instead of issuing money directly, the U.S. government lets the Federal Reserve create it out of thin air, and then the U.S. government borrows it. Talk about stupid. Number three, the Federal Reserve has destroyed more than 96% of the value of the U.S. dollar. Did you know that it's lost that much since 1900? Of course, almost all that decline has happened since the Federal Reserve was created in 1913. And because the money supply is designed to expand constantly, it is guaranteed that all of our dollars will be constantly losing value. Inflation is a hidden tax that continually robs us of our wealth. Number four, the Federal Reserve can bail out whoever it wants. Now, who did it bail out? You? Me? Small businesses? Homeowners? Underwater? No. Citigroup, $2.5 trillion. Morgan Stanley, $2.41 trillion. Merrill Lynch, $1.9 trillion. Bank of America, $1.3 trillion. Barclays, Foreign Bank, $868 billion. Bear Stearns, $853 billion. Goldman Sachs, $843, $14 billion. Royal Bank of Scotland, $541 billion. J.P. Morgan Chase, $391 billion. Deutsche Bank, $351 billion. UBS, $287 billion. And so it goes. All banks. And then what did they do? Did they give this money back into the economy? Did they stimulate growth? No, they did not. They bought up their competition, gave themselves enormous bonuses, and then invested that into foreign exchanges. They gave them anywhere from a 2 to an 8% increase in profits since that money cost them nothing. They got bigger. We got poorer. The Federal Reserve is paying banks not to lend money. Did you know that the Federal Reserve is actually paying banks not to lend money? That is true. And Section 128 of the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act of 2008 allows the Federal Reserve to pay interest on excess reserves that the U.S. banks park at the Fed. So the banks can just send their cash to the Fed and watch the money come rolling in risk-free, and yet they didn't pay anything for it. How much is that right now? $1.5 trillion. Number six, the Federal Reserve creates artificial economic bubbles. After all, the entire housing bubble, the commercial real estate bubble, all created by low interest rates and easy money. The Federal Reserve System is dominated by the big Wall Street banks and no one else. It is not an accident that we saw the personal income tax and the Federal Reserve System both come in existence in 1913. They conspired, and the Federal Reserve has become too big and too powerful. I'm Gary Nall. Let's say hello to George from Connecticut. Hi, George. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. It just seems like you turned to my exact question. My question, instead of giving all its money to the Alibaba and his 40 thieves, why don't we have a nomination of Brooksley Bourne, have a campaign? Maybe we can get all of the major radio announcers across the country, if that happened, and also got a campaign of people realizing how important we need an honest player there rather than Goldman Sachs and the 40 thieves and the like. We might actually get a turnaround in the situation.
I would agree with that, and that would be a good place to start. But rather than go towards a person that most people would not have known of, who was very important when that person worked overseeing the Commodities Future Exchange, we need, was overseeing Wall Street on its policies and was subjugated to constant harassment because of that. We need to get a president elected that's an independent person, and senators and representatives elected who are independent of the corporate Democrat and Republicans. Thank you for your call. Anthony from New Jersey. Hi, Anthony.
How you doing, Gary?
Good.
I just want to say that
I believe, I guess with your celebrity or whatever, I guess we need more like, I say, well, I'm 28 years old, so I grew up during the era of, I'd say, gangster rap, I guess, right? Not promoting it, not saying nothing, but at least back then, they at least were addressing things like police brutality or inequality or the crack epidemic or stuff going on, which nowadays we don't have nobody, no musicians talking about anything like that, where at least it brought attention to things where no one's doing that anymore. It seems like, I guess because they're quick to do whatever they do, you know, but I just feel like like we need somebody out there that's at least if it was drilled into people, people would hear it every day, and other people that were in those communities or came from those places and educated them, it would be more, I don't know, you know,
in
that way.
I understand, Anthony, what you're saying. I would say that there are many people who today, in their lyrics, are putting messages that challenge the power and wrongness of what is happening. But we need to have articulate spokespersons at all levels of society, within high schools, within social movements, within colleges, within the workplace, who are willing to share information that can inspire people. But first, you have to have education. You have to educate people to the problem if you're going to ask them to be a part of the solution. We don't have that yet. But
yeah,
that doesn't. Not, we don't have enough of it yet. There's certainly people out there, and most of what's happening is a grassroots level. Look, we got 2.5 million people to spend a day protesting Monsanto. That all came from one single person in California who was concerned. We just need more people to wake up, become concerned, educate themselves, and start grassroots movements. Then we will add to the existing grassroots movement, and we'll go forward. So thank you. I appreciate your input.
Thank you.
And that brings us up to the end of this particular program. We have Luann Panessi on. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, just to add to the Things That Enrage Us department, I read today that a small organic farm in Arlington, Texas, was the target of a massive police action last week that included aerial surveillance, a SWAT raid, and a 10-hour search. They actually went into this organic farm, and because some neighbor thought they were growing pot, the police seized, are you ready for this, 17 blackberry bushes, 15 okra plants, 14 tomatillo plants, native grasses, and sunflowers. And they held residents inside at gunpoint for over a half an hour, and the raid lasted 10 hours. And all of this because a neighbor didn't like the way they stacked their wood and that there was a piece of siding missing from their house. So this is what we've been reduced to. I mean, this has to enrage people.
It will not enrage people. No, we only become enraged when we personally are victimized. Otherwise, we believe it couldn't happen to us. It has to happen to someone else. That's the way it is. And the more elite, the more educated, the more prosperous a person is, the more in denial that they would be victimized by either the climate they're living in, because if you're living in an environment where you have air conditioning, if you walk down the street and every store has abundant produce, you walk into a restaurant, there's nothing missing from the menu. When you can go to a theater and enjoy a good movie, a good play, a good culture, when your streets are clean and your neighborhood is safe, you no longer are connected with the reality outside of that protective little oasis. And unfortunately, the average American is so myopic today, so disjointed and disconnected from the larger community of the world, they can't see what other people are experiencing, and therefore it's not their issue. So this will not enrage anyone. But the larger problem here is not that they raided an organic farm and did all this. It's the fact that they were raiding farms for raw milk and Amish farmers. They've been doing this for some time. That's because they've militarized the police. Historically, someone would have gone out there, a local health inspector, done an inspection, found out there wasn't a problem, and no big deal. Once you militarize, then you bring in SWAT, and then the budget goes to the local community for your SWAT. Then there's no incentive to lessen that. The incentive is to allow it to grow. So they even have SWAT teams now on local non-criminal complaints, issuing summonses, SWAT teams issuing summonses. That's how bad it's gotten. And again, that is part of fascism. That's part of the militarization of police. And you're going to see far more of that happening. Okay.
Well, that's unfortunate. It is the same exact type of raid. And these poor people, I mean, they're defenseless. And they're seizing plants that they don't know what they are and thinking that they're some kind of drugs.
There are thousands of injustices every day in the United States. The injustice of racism, the injustice of ageism, the injustice of gender disqualification, the injustice of hiring a 20-year-old who is willing to work for $7 an hour instead of a 50-year-old who had mastered that work because they'd have to have a living wage, and you exclude that person. That's what we are filled with injustice, the injustice of the environment where people turn on a tap in 16 states, the water either comes out dirty or not at all, because no one paid attention to the commons, something we used to take pride in, the commonness of our aquifers, our lakes, our rivers. When the Cuyahoga River near Cleveland caught on fire, that suddenly had to dramatize how polluted the water had become, and that became a national rallying cry. Today, the injustices are at every level. When a kid can't go to school and learn something because they live in dire poverty, when schools have closed that once served those children, when we don't look at the underlying cause of poverty, but rather we look at the consequences of poverty in some individuals, but only in some, only those of color. We don't look at what happens when a white kid ends up in juvenile court and gets a mother that comes in who's a doctor and says, my son is acting out, and the judge says, okay, we're getting some psychological counseling. The same black kid ends up in court, and that kid now goes off 6 years to jail. That is a consequence of poverty, not simply having a single mother, as Bill O'Reilly would like us to believe. We're not willing to look at the underlying progenitor of an issue, therefore the issue doesn't change. And that's why we are living myopically. We are a monotheistic society. We have so relegated our lives to such small perspectives that we have lost the interconnectivity of all that is dynamic. Thank you for your call, Luann.
Okay.
Hello, Utrice Lead.
Okay. Hello, Gary. Is it safe to talk to you now?
Yes.
Okay, good. PRN yesterday was, and still remains, I haven't seen the story anyplace else, reporting a major development in the Tawana Brawley case, in which a Virginia court threw out the defamation suit by one of the men alleged to be her attacker among her four attackers. So the judgment that everybody was reporting, he won the judgment and she's now going to have to pay him more than $400,000. A Virginia court threw it out as dismissed it as having no merit.
Okay, well, so, you broke that story, and we appreciate the kind of cutting edge journalism that you bring to the air.
Well, thank you. And today, I'm talking about something I hope that we have a good consideration about, and that is the NSA privacy hypocrisy. There's a flip side to it that is very uncomfortable for people to think about. So I'm going to be talking about that today.
Great. We look forward to it. Utrice Lead right now.